Now, from Hollywood, romance. Romance. Stories of love and adventure, of comedy and crisis, of conflict and human emotion. Today, we bring you a story of 12 men and women whose lives for 3.5 years have been encircled by the barbed wire of a Japanese prison camp. Our story, The Long Way Home, is written by Leonard St. Clair and stars Larry Thor and Ellen Morgan. The thermometer in the embarkation room stood at 102, cool for the port of Cochin on the Malabar coast of India. It was August 7, 1945. Hiroshima and the atomic bomb plus one day. August and the southwest monsoon. Outside it was raining, and inside steaming bedlam. There were the British military, Indian porters, seamen and stevedores, International Red Cross agents, port officials and police, and the 12 passengers who were to go aboard the Norsefjord.
Oh, I thought I recognized you. You were on the same plane that flew us out from Singapore.
Let me through, please. Let me through.
Move along there. Next.
Sure, the war is as good as over. Drop another atomic bomb and that'll be it.
Show your papers, please. Show your papers.
Let me through, please.
Messages for the International Red Cross in Israel.
I'm sorry, madam. There's no wireless messages may be sent of a personal nature.
Major.
They can make an exception if there were special circumstances, an urgent reason.
Madam, everyone in this room has an urgent reason. They're all special circumstances. Nothing can be done until we get new orders.
Major, if you please.
Captain Arendelle. Yes, you come to your sailing papers, I suppose, huh?
I was told they'd be here at your desk.
Right, sir. As soon as I find
Major,
them.
You can't send my message now. Could you keep it here and send it when your orders change?
Yes, but then who knows when that will be, huh?
Oh, please, just on the chart.
All right, madam, I'll file it. Here you are. Here are your papers, Captain.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you have a safe voyage, sir.
We sailed at 1,400 hours, a captured German freighter with the name Norsefjord, freshly painted on bow and stern. Home port, Oslo. A port which she had never seen. A Norwegian captain and crew who had served out the war in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. Wellington Island disappeared astern and we were in the open sea. The rain broke off and the sun came out just before it set. Advance to full speed.
Advance to full speed, yes, sir.
A long voyage ahead, Mr. Orlick.
A very long voyage, sir. Very pretty, isn't she, sir?
What?
The lady standing up there in the bow, Mrs. Bruner.
Do you know her?
No, sir. The steward told me her name, Pamela Bruner. English girl married to a German national.
Very pretty. Walks with a good deal of grace. Could be a dancer.
That's a good guess, sir. Steward saw her unpack her bags. There was a photo of her with some ballet troupe.
Well, Mr. Orlick, you're going home, you know. You've got a girl.
It's been 5 years, sir. A lot could have happened.
A lot has happened, Mr. Orlick. Too much. We were going home, and yet I could feel no excitement among my officers and crew. And at dinner that first evening, there were few smiles among the passengers. Mr. Maxwell, the American, seemed the only one who cared to talk. He addressed all his remarks to Mrs. Bruner. Apparently, they had known each other in the Japanese prison camp. And before that, he had been the Singapore agent for an American oil company. After dinner, I returned to the bridge. About mid-evening, the radio officer phoned and asked me to come to the wireless room.
Sir, this lady insists that I radio a personal message for her.
I see. Mrs. Bruner, I believe I heard the embarkation officer in Cochin tell you it could not be done.
But now we're at sea, Captain Arendelle. This is your ship. You're the only authority.
My authority is subject to the Army and Navy commands, madam. We're under radio silence.
Well, if you'll let me explain, for three and a half years, Eric and I have had no word from each other. Don't you see? I want him to know that I'm coming home, that I'm alive.
You are alive, Mrs. Brunner. But your husband...
Even Belson could not kill my husband, Captain.
I wish I had your confidence, madam.
He is alive.
And if he is?
Well, then I'm sure he's gone to Israel. Just before we said goodbye the last time, Eric and I made plans to go to Israel. We wanted to live and work there. Captain, let me send my message. Let the Red Cross find Eric so he can be waiting for me at Port Said.
Mr. Bonson, you will follow your instructions. Radio silence is not to be broken.
Yes, sir.
Captain Ondo.
Madam, you believe in miracles. I do not.
I see. Good night, gentlemen.
I told myself that only fools or saints could have such faith. What could I believe about my own wife, my own son? For almost 5 years, the enemy had occupied Norway. After 5 years, what was I going home to? On our third day out, one of the passengers, a Mrs. Raleigh, invited everyone to what she gaily called a tea party in the passengers' lounge.
Well, everybody seems to be here. Except, of course, Mrs. Brunner and Mr. Maxwell. But that's to be expected, isn't it?
Well, in what way, Mrs. Raleigh?
Oh, now, really, Captain. You must have noticed our shipboard romance.
Mrs. Brunner has a husband, Mrs. Raleigh. Or at least she thinks she has.
Did you hear that, everybody? Oh, Captain, you're simply delightful.
After that, I began to watch. Yes, they were together a great deal. Walking the deck, playing cards, at boat drill, the shuffle board games, always together. On the fourth night out, I had trouble sleeping. I left my cabin and went to the lounge for a magazine. As I started to enter, I heard music coming from the shortwave radio and voices.
But how do you know that's the Vienna station? We haven't heard an announcer.
Oh, it's Vienna. I remember the wavelength.
Sometimes I think you remember too much, Pam.
Happiness should be remembered. My first solo with the ballet. The night Eric played the Mendelssohn with the Vienna Philharmonic. Those are the lasting things, Tony.
Uh-huh. Until a war comes along and destroys everything.
Oh, I wish you could have seen our home, Tony. Our garden went right down to the bank of the Danube. There were rose bushes and lilacs and a little pool filled with water lilies.
You can have another garden, Pam. You can have anything you want. I told you when I hit New York, there's over 3 years back pay waiting for me.
Oh, Eric used to play this waltz. It was one of his encore numbers.
Please, Pam, don't keep shutting me out. I can give you a good home, a fine home.
Tony, I'm already married. I've got a husband.
But you don't know.
I do. Eric is alive. I know it.
For your sake, I hope he is, Pam. If he means that much to you. I suppose you do find him. Don't expect things to be just as they always were.
Don't expect
years him. Have gone by. Things are bound to be different.
You're saying that Eric may not still love me, is that it?
I'm sorry.
You're telling me that Eric may not want to see me again.
Eric's had to live his own life for a long while, Pam. A life you've had no part of.
This is your musical digest broadcast from the Armed Forces radio station in Rome, Italy.
Rome? Oh, no, it's Vienna.
That's what I mean,
Pam.
For
a change of pace,
you can't go back and pick up life as it was. The world has changed. Vienna, your home, your garden, your husband. Everything's different now.
Turn it off, Tony, turn it off.
Pam, take what you're already sure of. You know that I love you. It's not something you've got to find out when we reach Port Said. It exists here, now. The life I can give you is real. Take it, Pam, take it.
Please, Tony, please. You've got to give me this time.
The following evening, I was strolling the main deck. It was another hot night. The sea was a black mirror. An orange moon hung in the sky.
Good evening, Captain.
Oh, Mrs. Raleigh.
You're just in time. But don't let them see you.
Hmm? Don't let who?
Back there, by the ventilator. See them? Mrs. Brunner and Mr. Maxwell.
Madam, this is none of our business.
No, but
Mrs. Bruner has certainly made it hers. Oh, he's a catch for any woman.
I suppose. Take what you're already sure of.
What?
Nothing, Mrs. Raleigh. Just an old saying. The golden rule of all the smart people of this world.
We'll return to romance in just a moment. It takes more than shooting to unravel the situation that develops in the pioneer town of Dodge City in the next tense episode of Gunsmoke. A widow's tears and the story her mixed-up 9-year-old son has to tell sets Marshall Dillon to thinking. And before you know it, he comes to one surprising conclusion after another until finally the lady is herself surprised and there is Gunsmoke. For exciting drama in the best Western style, hear Gunsmoke just a short time from now. And now for the second act of Romance.
The sixth day out of Cochin, the North Fjord entered the currents of the Gulf of Aden. At sunset, the seventh day, we sighted the brown bluffs of Saudi Arabia. By dawn, we were steaming northwest through the Red Sea. I was going up to the bridge as the radio officer dashed out of the wireless room.
Captain, sir, I want you to hear something.
Something wrong, Mr. Watson?
Quick, sir.
It is further reported that the Emperor of Japan will make a special broadcast to his people announcing the complete and unconditional surrender. All armed forces radio stations monitor and...
Mr. Orlick, sound for boat drill immediately. Start the siren. Assemble all hands on the foredeck. Passengers and crew listened to me in a kind of stunned silence. Then, all at once, the realization came. Peace at last. The ship's carpenter brought out an old crank phonograph. The two Dutch passengers did a polka on the forward hatch. The three Frenchmen led the deckhands in the final chorus of the Marseillaise. The English passengers replied with God Save the King. The ship's cook found two bottles of champagne, which he brought to the lounge. Passengers and officers raised their glasses to each other.
All right, everybody! The toast! To peace! To a better world and a new life for all of us!
Peace!
Well,
it's hard to believe, isn't it, Captain?
Yes.
Well, come on, drink up, everybody. Let's not let the party die. Mrs. Raleigh, you told us you used to be in vaudeville. How about a song, Mrs. Raleigh?
Oh, I'm sorry. Now, I was just wondering if my son and daughter have heard the news yet. They live in Coventry, you know, or they did before the Blitz.
Yeah, sure. Pam, you've got a pretty good voice, haven't you?
Oh, not now, Tony.
Well, look. What's the matter with everybody? One minute we're laughing and singing. It's the biggest day of our lives, and now... Well, what's wrong? What is it?
I think he knew, but no one had the courage to put it into words. After so many years of war, peace itself was frightening. We were going back to lives and homes and people that could no longer defend themselves with the excuse, there's a war going on. What were they going to find? What was I going to find? For 2 days, we steamed through the Red Sea. During that time, I could see no change in the relationship between Maxwell and Mrs. Bruner. They were always together. By her choice or his insistence. Mr. Borenson?
Yes, sir?
Take this message to the director of canal traffic. Our position is 36 degrees, 12 minutes east, 26 degrees, 1 minute north. Estimated approach to the Suez Canal, 1,700 hours tomorrow.
1,700 hours. Yes, sir.
We await his confirmation and instructions as to the pilot.
Yes, sir. I'll get it off right away.
Captain Arndt?
Yes, Mrs. Brunner?
I'd like your permission to talk by radio telephone to the International Red Cross.
In Israel?
Yes. I want to know if my message from Cochin got through to them.
Oh, I doubt it. Radio silence still applies to personal messages, even on this ship.
But the war is over.
Well, technically, yes.
Captain, I'm sorry if I seem unreasonable, but my whole future life depends on finding my husband.
You're assuming, of course, that he is alive.
He has to be.
Mrs. Brunner, you're not the only passenger who has asked to use our wireless. We cannot accommodate anyone until our orders change.
I see. Very well.
Mrs. Brunner.
Yes?
If your husband is not waiting for you at Port Said, will you stay aboard and finish out the voyage with us?
I'll decide that when we reach Port Said. Good night, Captain.
Late the following afternoon, we passed Port Tewfik and entered the Suez Canal. The passengers crowded the railings and stared at the desert of Arabia on our starboard and the shores of Africa on our port. At dinner, there was a peculiar tension in the air. Everyone was talking, and yet the talk had an unreal quality. People joked about what they would find at home. One of the Dutchmen hoped the Nazis had bombed out his factory so he could retire. Dubois, the youngest of the Frenchmen, predicted that his wife was now a bigamist. Everyone pretended amusement, except Mrs. Brunner. Suddenly, she got to her feet and looked around the table.
It's all very funny, isn't it? Laugh. Make jokes about everything that matters to you, because you're afraid to believe there's still good in the world. I've seen it growing day by day, and now you're all simply terrified to hope. Then why bother to get on this ship? Why go home if it's to nothing?
Mrs. Brunner, I suggest that you sit down.
Why? Do I make everyone ashamed? Am I the only one who has faith in life? I know what you're all thinking. She lives in a dream. Tomorrow there'll be no one waiting for her at Port Said. Her husband is dead. And if he's alive, he's found some other woman.
Pam, stop it.
You want Eric to be your proof that nothing lasts in life. I say Eric is alive. He'll be waiting for me.
At midnight, we passed Ismailia, the halfway point of the canal. It was impossible to sleep. The combined heart of Africa and Arabia seemed to press down on the ship like an invisible force. At dawn, I dressed and went back to the bridge. Mr. Bornson was waiting for me.
Sir, radio silence has been broken.
What? Officially?
Yes, sir. I was just listening to Cairo talking to Bombay. They were transmitting personal messages.
I wonder how long.
I asked Port Said, sir. They said controls were lifted 3 days ago.
3 days. Oh.
Shall I tell the passengers, sir? They've all got messages.
I'll announce it at breakfast.
Very good, sir.
Oh, Mr. Bornson.
Yes, sir.
There's one passenger you might tell right now. She's down there on the foredeck. The sun was only a red hint on the horizon, yet she was down there, waiting. She wore a dress I'd never seen before, something white and feminine. Her very best, I imagine. The minarets of Port Said appeared off the bow. Maxwell joined Mrs. Brunner at the railing. Then, by twos and threes, the rest of the passengers. Everyone was waiting, wondering. This lone woman had become a symbol for all of us. Landings and warehouses swung into view. Down channel, the customs launch put out and headed for us. I heard a voice behind me.
Captain, may I come onto the bridge?
If you wish, certainly.
May I borrow your binoculars?
Mr. Orlick, the glasses.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Where will we go ashore, Captain?
Dead ahead. The wharf with the yellow warehouse. Mr. Orlick, reduced to quarter speed.
Reduced to quarter speed, yes, sir.
I could make out a group of men standing on the wharf. Mrs. Bruner trained the glasses on first one, then another.
See anything, Pam?
It was Maxwell. His face was set, tense. In a half circle behind him were the rest of the passengers, waiting silently, watching the woman with the glasses. On the foredeck below, the crew stared up at the bridge, waiting. Their own hope for the future somehow in the balance as they watched this slim girl.
Do you see him, Pam?
Stop engines. Lower ladder for customs launch.
Stop engines, lower ladder. Yes, sir.
Pam, do you?
No. Are you sure, dear?
Yes.
Well, perhaps... Perhaps he just couldn't get here in time.
She handed me the glasses. She was crying.
I thought if I believed strongly enough...
Would have taken a miracle, Mrs. Brunner.
And they don't happen, do they? All right, Tony, we can go.
The passengers turned away. Their faces were suddenly tired, hopeless.
Captain, the customs launch is signaling us.
Stand by to take them aboard.
Yes, sir. There's a man on the boat waving, sir.
A man? Give me the glasses.
She fumbled and almost dropped them. She focused, then put the glasses down and wiped her eyes, then focused again. Everyone stood frozen. Maxwell, the mate, the helmsman, the passengers, the crew.
Eric! Eric! Eric!
Mrs. Bruner and her husband went ashore in the customs launch. The officers, the deckhands, the passengers, even Maxwell, stood at the railing and waved them out of sight. Their faces smiling. Mr. Bonson.
Yes, sir?
Do you think you can contact Oslo for me?
Oslo, sir? I'll try.
I'd like to send a personal message.
Yes, sir?
To Mrs. Rudolf Arndal... Oslo, Norway.
Your wife, sir?
My wife, Mr. Bonson. Tell her I'm on my way home.
It's been a long time, sir.
Yes, Mr. Bonson. It's been a long way home.
Romance is produced and directed in Hollywood by Anthony Ellis. Today's story, The Long Way Home, was adapted for Romance by Leonard St. Clair from a story by Het Mannheim and starred Ellen Morgan and Larry Thor. Others in the cast were Irene Tedrow, Ben Wright, Victor Perrin, John Stevenson, and Charles Seal. Musical supervision by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Dan Cubberly, inviting you to hear Romance next week at this same time. No mere double feature this, but six top-flight dramatic shows in a row every Sunday here at the Star's address. Yes, on Sundays, most of these same stations bring you unusual and diverting drama on the CBS Radio Workshop, Suspense, Indictment, Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, the FBI in Peace and War, and the Sunday episode of Gunsmoke. Tomorrow, rejoin us on CBS Radio and enjoy all six of these engrossing shows. They're all different. And each and every one of them is exciting in its own particular way. Stay tuned for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.